Something strange is happening right now in Central Asia that has so far escaped most of the world's attention. The Caspian Sea is the largest inland body of water that can be found anywhere in the world. Placed over the United States, it would stretch roughly from Los Angeles in the south all the way up into Oregon and Idaho in the north. With no natural connection to the rest of the world's oceans, the Caspian is technically the world's largest lake both by surface area and by volume. It is bordered by five countries: Russia, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Azerbaijan, and Iran. And tragically, the Caspian Sea is rapidly collapsing to the point where in just a few decades from now, it'll probably be completely unrecognizable from today. Based on multiple recent scientific studies, including one published in the journal Nature in 2020 by researchers from the University of Bremen and Utrecht University, the Caspian Sea stands to decline by between 9 meters and 18 meters by the end of the 21st century, with the 9-meter decline taking place under a medium emission scenario and the more catastrophic 18-meter decline taking place under a high emission scenario. In more straightforward terms, a 9-meter decline in the water level of the Caspian Sea from today will translate into a net loss of 23% of the Caspian Sea's current surface area, while the greater 18-meter decline will result in a net loss of 34% of it. Either way, it's likely that by the end of the century, an area roughly the size of Portugal will dry up and become new land out of the Caspian Sea, which will change the world map and global geography substantially within many of our own lifetimes. And most alarmingly of all, the northern parts of the Caspian Sea might disappear within just the next couple of decades by 2050. You see, the Caspian Sea can be broadly divided between three different geographic sub-basins: a northern, center, and southern basin, and the depths of water between all of these basins is radically different. The southern basin is the deepest of all, with depths reaching more than a full kilometer, approaching truly oceanic depths. The center basin is very deep as well, with depths reaching as deep as 788 meters, while by comparison, the northern basin is extremely, extremely shallow. The northern basin only has a mean depth of just 5 meters. And so despite making up roughly one-third of the Caspian Sea's total surface area, the northern basin only accounts for about 1% of the sea's total water volume, since it's so insanely shallow by comparison. As a result, the declining sea levels within the Caspian will overwhelmingly negatively affect the northern basin of the Caspian Sea first, bordering Kazakhstan and Russia, along with the shallow Karabogaz Gul Inlet that's fully enclosed within Turkmenistan. Even under the 9-meter sea level loss scenario, which might happen by 2050, most of the shallower northern Caspian Sea will be lost, while even greater losses will happen all around the sea under the 18-meter loss scenario. Interestingly, the projected loss of sea level within the Caspian across the 21st century will be the opposite of the projected gains in sea level happening across the rest of the world's oceans. And it's appearing to be a hauntingly similar scenario to what happened to the nearby Aral Sea last century, which itself used to be the third largest lake in the world before Soviet-era mismanagement led to its nearly complete and irreversible collapse by the early 2000s. The larger Caspian Sea might now be heading in a disturbingly similar direction, and there are many reasons why. First of all, it's important to note that the Caspian Sea has experienced a very long previous history of both rapid decline and rapid growth. Over the past 40,000 years, the Caspian Sea's surface area has routinely expanded and contracted again with the climate, like during the last glacial period when cooler temperatures resulted in a much lower evaporation rate. But as the world warmed and the Eurasian glaciers melted, depriving the Caspian of a major water source, it shifted more or less into its current form by the start of recorded human history. Even afterwards, though, the Caspian would experience huge shifts in water levels of between 7 and 10 meters in growth or decline over a century or longer periods. And by the start of the 20th century, we began having highly reliable scientific data to actually go off of. Collected by researchers from across the Caspian Sea region and published in a study to Nature in 2025, measurements of the Caspian Sea's water level since 1900 show an interesting pattern. Because the Caspian Sea is very low beneath the global mean sea level, the measurements on the x-axis here are indexed against global mean sea level, which is why they're all negative. In other words, at the start of the 20th century, the Caspian Sea level was approximately negative 25.8 meters below global mean sea level. It then decreased by around 2 meters over decades until it stabilized in the 1950s and 60s, before it then began to decrease rapidly again across the 1970s, reaching its lowest ever point in the past century in 1977 at negative 29 meters. Subsequent interventions by the Soviet Union and a shifting climate actually managed to curb the trend, and the Caspian then regained about 2 meters of water level over the next couple of decades by 1995. But since then, the Caspian has returned back to a near-constant three-decade-long downward trend again, as measured by NASA's satellite data seen here in the shallow northeastern corner of the sea by Kazakhstan. Since 1996, the Caspian Sea has declined back to negative 28 meters below the global mean sea level, nearly as low as the lowest it got in the late 1970s. In other words, since the 1990s, the Caspian has already lost approximately 23,858 square kilometers of its surface area, almost all of which was lost in the shallow northeastern sector of the sea. And the reasons why it's been shrinking again in our modern era are rather straightforward. You see, as a fully enclosed, landlocked sea, the Caspian Sea's water level is defined by the balance between three interconnected factors: water inflow rates through rivers, water inflow rates through precipitation, and water outflow rates through evaporation. Approximately 130 rivers flow into the Caspian Sea, which provide it with incoming freshwater. But the vast majority of it all just comes through a single one of them, the Volga. The Volga is the longest river in Europe, and with its delta in the northern Caspian, more than 80% of the water inflow to the Caspian through rivers comes through it alone. However, the amount of water reaching the Caspian through the Volga has been in a state of steady decline for decades now. According to a 2026 peer-reviewed study published by the American Geophysical Union, the volume of water discharged through the Volga into the Caspian has declined from an average of about 263 cubic kilometers per year between 1991 and 2005 to about 231 cubic kilometers per year between 2006 and 2020, a reduction in flow of about 12%. There's been a lot of speculation and accusations that this decline is the fault of Soviet and Russian construction of dams along the Volga. But the problem with that line of reasoning is that no additional dams have been built along the Volga since the 1980s, while the same study I just mentioned also concluded that the decline in the Volga's flow can be attributed entirely to a decline in precipitation alone. Regardless of the cause, the primary source of river inflow into the Caspian Sea has become increasingly restricted since the mid-1990s, at the same time as climate change is also increasing evaporation within the sea itself as well. Between 1979 and 2015, the average annual surface air temperature over the Caspian measurably increased by around 1 degree Celsius, which has substantially increased the rate of evaporation that's happening within the Caspian. In fact, the same 2026 study published by the American Geophysical Union concluded that as much as 40% of the Caspian Sea's water volume loss since 2000 can be attributed to this increase in evaporation rate alone, while most of the remaining loss can be attributed to the reduction in river inflow through the Volga and other rivers. Thus, if the world continues warming through the 21st century, which is likely, the evaporation rate will likely continue increasing, while the inflow rates through rivers will also likely continue decreasing. And that's why the Caspian Sea is projected to decline by somewhere between 9 and 18 meters by the end of the century, depending on whether or not we end up in a medium or a high emission scenario. And the various implications of that decline over the next few decades are going to be very bad for everyone who lives around the sea. The almost complete loss of the northern basin of the Caspian Sea will result in enormous environmental and ecological damage. The Caspian Sea serves as a habitat for hundreds of endemic and migratory species that could face cascading pressures towards extinction. The shallower waters in the north of the Caspian serve as a breeding and spawning grounds for many of the sea's fish species, including the endangered sturgeons that made up the backbone of the caviar industries in both Iran and Russia. The loss of those shallower waters will therefore put even further extinctionary pressures on the Caspian sturgeon population. While it'll be very bad news for the Caspian Sea's most famous endemic animal as well, the Caspian seal. Already classified as endangered, the Caspian seal only exists within the Caspian Sea. During the winter season, the shallower northern reaches of the Caspian Sea will freeze over with ice, which the Caspian seals always gather at and use for their breeding and pupping grounds. However, even with the lower 9-meter projected decline in the Caspian sea level, virtually all of this annual winter sea ice cover will become lost. And there's no obvious way that the Caspian seal would be able to adapt and survive afterwards with this complete collapse of their breeding grounds. And if all that weren't bad enough, the economic consequences of the shrinking sea will be devastating as well. The Caspian Sea is a major component of the global oil and gas industry, Roughly 3% of the world's oil reserves and 4% of the world's natural gas reserves exist within and around the sea, while most of the major oil fields exist in the northern basin nearby to Kazakhstan, including the offshore Kashagan field, the single largest oil field discovered anywhere in the world in the past 30 years. Tens of billions of dollars from Kazakhstan and various foreign oil companies have been invested into developing and exploiting the Kashagan field with offshore infrastructure since it was discovered in 2000. All of the oil production at Kashagan currently relies on this offshore infrastructure and ship-based logistics since it's currently, you know, surrounded by water. But in the event of even a 9-meter reduction in the Caspian sea levels, Kashagan will become completely landlocked, which might make the entire project obsolete and devastate Kazakhstan's economy. Additionally, the retreating sea will make docking for ships increasingly difficult in critical northeastern Caspian Sea ports like Aktau and Kuryak in Kazakhstan and Astrakhan and Makhachkala in Russia that will find themselves ever further away from the new shoreline. Based on data collected by yet another scientific study published in Nature in April of 2025, more than a third of all the measured industrial infrastructure facilities around the Caspian, including oil refineries, gas processing plants, and ports, will find themselves more than 5 kilometers away from the Caspian's new shoreline from where they are today by the end of the century. Azerbaijan's largest city and capital, Baku, could find itself more than a kilometer away from the new shoreline from where it is today. Turkmenbeshi in Turkmenistan could end up about 16 kilometers away from the new sea, while Lagan in Russia could wind up more than 120 kilometers away from the new coastline. The Caspian Sea has no natural path out to the world's oceans, but it does have an artificial one in the form of the Volga-Don Canal in Russia, which was opened back in the 1950s and connects the Volga River and the Don River at their closest points, which is what enables continuous navigation across them between the Caspian and Black Seas. This route enables countries around the Caspian that would otherwise be landlocked, like Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, and Kazakhstan, their only meaningful access to the global ocean and global maritime trade. However, a collapse in the water levels of the Caspian Sea will inevitably result in the lowering of water levels within the Volga River as well. That means that ships moving through the Volga and through the Volga-Don Canal will have to become smaller, which will critically compromise both maritime trade and naval access for Caspian Sea states like Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, and Kazakhstan. If all of this comes to pass, it'll also have critical implications for the so-called Middle Corridor, the emerging major trade route between China and Europe that bypasses major Western geopolitical foes like Russia and Iran by running across the Caspian. In order for the Middle Corridor to properly function, goods from China cross Kazakhstan by rail to the port of Aktau, where they board cargo vessels for transit across the Caspian to Baku in Azerbaijan, where they continue onwards on rail towards Europe. But with the sea receding away from both Aktau and Baku in the more severe projections, it's unclear how viable this route may actually be in the long term when compared to the alternative routes going through Russia in the north or through Iran in the south. Going in the other direction from north to south, it's also almost certain that the great reduction in the Caspian Sea level in the north will hinder trade between Iran and Russia, too. And the transformation of the surface area of the Caspian will also have major geopolitical and border ramifications as well. The baseline of the sea, what determines the territorial scope of maritime boundaries, will drastically change with the declining sea levels, which will result in a shifting of maritime borders across the sea that will have to become negotiated between all 5 of the states that surround it. And additionally, there will be the question of who will control the newly revealed land. By the end of the 21st century, there could be an amount of dried-up land in the Caspian equivalent to the size of Portugal, but virtually all of that land will likely be mostly useless. It will quickly transform into either desert or steppe, and then there's the problem that the Caspian Sea is heavily polluted too from its history of oil and gas extraction, shipping, and industrial and sewage dumping from all of the states that surround it. As a result, the dried-up land in the Caspian is likely to be heavily contaminated by pollutants, which will make it virtually worthless for agriculture. And it'll probably be even worse than useless because much like what happened with the dried-up lake bed in the Aral Sea, winds blowing across this region will carry all of that newly exposed toxic dust across the region that'll wreck the local air quality. As the drying up of the Caspian results in economic resources like fish and oil and gas getting more difficult to exploit, results in ports and maritime access getting more difficult to utilize, and results in a worsening environmental quality with a likely increase in toxic dust storms, what will end up happening to the roughly 15 million people who currently live around the sea? Many of them will likely pack up their bags and move somewhere else as climate refugees, similar to what happened around the Aral Sea after it collapsed in the 1990s and 2000s. And again, even if humanity is successful at curbing our global emissions, many of the worst consequences, including the 9-meter sea level decline within the Caspian, is still likely inevitable no matter what happens. Which means that nearly a quarter of the sea will likely not exist within only a couple of decades from now. All we can do is to try and curb our emissions to save the sea from its even more catastrophic scenario of an 18-meter decline or 34% surface area decline by 2100. And only time will tell if we manage to be successful with that or not. Over the past few months, the Caspian Sea has also emerged as a major front in both the Russia-Ukraine war and the US-Iran war. Iran has sent drones and arms to Russia aboard ships transiting across the Caspian. And after the US Navy began blockading Iran's oceanic access, the Caspian became the critical logistics lifeline for Iran since they could at least continue trading with Russia across it. During my research for videos that concern these wars, it always becomes clear that the mainstream news's portrayal of what's going on are often pretty skewed and incomplete. There's always an enormous, overwhelming amount of coverage of conflicts like Iran, but in the fog of war and rampant propaganda coming from both sides, it's always hard to know what's legitimately useful information versus incomplete facts trying to push a politicized narrative. As I was producing this video about the Caspian Sea, the US and Iran met in neutral Switzerland for negotiations on a final peace deal. Left-leaning platforms framed these talks as historic peacemaking that stressed progress, while casting Trump's threats as the primary destabilizing force and Iran's pause as a protest. While right-leaning platforms flipped that lens by using words like unprecedented, hardline, and leverage to portray Iran as strategic, suspicious, and bargain-driven, with Lebanon and sanctions as the real dividing lines. And that's why I found my sponsor, Ground News, to be such a crucial tool while writing many of my videos. I've partnered with them since 2023, and this is why. Almost 340 sources covered the US-Iran negotiations in Switzerland's story. And when I looked on Ground News, I was able to quickly see how each news outlet framed the story. Ground News is an app and website that aggregates coverage of particular news stories, sources them based on the political alignment of the publisher, and then allows you to compare the way narratives differ between the sides of the political spectrum. I know that I, personally, tend to consume news sources that align with my own political bias, but that even these sources tend to confirm my biases by characterizing politicized stories in a particular way. So, I find Ground News helps a lot when figuring out what's an objective truth versus a biased narrative. I also love that they display the ownership for each publication, and especially these days, it's becoming more and more clear how that can influence what publications portray as the truth. And then another feature I use is the blind spot feed, which shows you stories that sources on one side of the political spectrum are talking about. I think it's extremely fascinating to see what certain groups of people think is top news while others don't even think about at all. And not only is this really interesting, but actually really meaningful. A recent study from Duke University on polarization in media found that exposure to news blind spots can moderate political positions and reduce polarization. Ground News is a fully independent, subscriber-funded platform designed for people who want to question the narrative. So, if that sounds like you, you can get 40% off unlimited access to a Vantage plan, the same one that I use, by scanning the QR code here on your screen or by heading to the link that's down below in the description at ground.news/reallifelore. Signing up really helps support my channel at the same time, so thanks in advance if you do, and as always, thank you so much for watching as well.